Nighttime on Still Waters. This is NB506812, narrowcasting into the night from somewhere on Britain's waterways. November 29th, Tuesday. Reluctant daylight. The sun's cold shoulder. Three ducks bob on ruffled water. I walk on uphill, grateful for thick socks. This is the narrowboat, Erica, narrowcasting to you on a magical night, washed in platinum and starshine. Moon shadows cast zebra stripes across the canal and towpath. And tonight, we are afloat among the stars. The temperature is just above zero. The stove is hot. The kettle has boiled. Thank you for coming. I'm so glad that you could make it. It's so lovely to see you. Come inside out of the cold and welcome aboard. Winter's wolf bite has bitten deep this week, nipping at the ears and fingers and noses. December the 1st marks the start of the meteorological winter, and this year at least the seasonal cycle has taken it seriously. It's been great and not great for all the complicated and, I candidly admit, contradictory reasons that lay behind my comments a couple of weeks back about my unease with the mildness of the autumn and the early winter. But around midweek, the wind direction, which had been pretty much south with some south-southwesterly spells, developed a distinct northeasterly edge to the air, bringing with it a rawness and the first feeling of real winter. We're in a bit of a frost hollow here, and so the temperatures are quite often a little below those in neighbouring areas. And our mornings and evenings have been softened and shrouded. Wreaths of mist lifted and hung spectrally above the water, so that the moorhens skittered from side to side as if they were cloud swimming, like water-bound swifts. And fogs unfolded, hanging low in the valleys, following the contours shared by the canal. And the reeds and the flag leaves sparkle with cloud dew, and the song of first light is muffled in an amber fire of greys tinged with gold. And even the jagged skeletal limbs and branches of trees look softer, wrapped in that nebulous light. And the world seems to shrink as the horizon of daylight draws infinitely closer, until I too am wrapped in this tiny, muted landscape. A small corridor of towpath beside a channel of water, leading in front and behind to the edges of this small world. And I walk as Adam once did, before the naming of the animals, before the touch of Eve. The dripping hedges shivered with movement and sharp bursts of song, and the cocooning warmth of the boat seems so very welcoming on dark mornings like these. And this weekend we've been putting up the lights and the Christmas decorations. It's usually at this period that the shortness of daylight becomes more noticeable, and it's good to fill the place with light. Some boats really go to town and are a blaze of colour that sets the waters around them afire. It's lovely to see this expression of light as the days grow colder and darker. And inside, we have now put up our tree, dotted lights and festive ornaments around the boat. There's not so much room as there is in a house, and draping streamers and those traditional decorations from the ceilings is not really an option when the ceiling is only really a couple of inches, if that, above your head. But it's good to mark these times, to recognize the tilt and turn of our globe and the cycles of our lives. And there are times when we need light to light our darkness. However, no matter how bright we can light our boats and our houses, we'd be hard-pressed to better the kingfisher. There's been a kingfisher regularly visiting us at the moment. Actually, they may be a pair. I see the male mostly. And he's getting more relaxed with our presence, often allowing us to be quite close to him before flitting off a flashing dart of electric blue light. In the dusk of a winter's gloom, it's not surprising that they were once associated with that haunting, flickering light of will-o'-the-wisps. And it's fitting that the kingfisher has been so visible to us of late, when the November winds have dropped, the periods of anticyclonic quiet between December storms. There was once a widespread belief that it was around St. Martin's Day, November the 11th, that the kingfisher would lay her eggs. St. Martin's summer, they called it, a customary spell of warmer, calmer weather, the halcyon days. And it's because of this that the other common name for the kingfisher is halcyon, from the Greek halcyon, which in turn gives rise to their Latin name, Alcedo. The gods of the elements, it was understood, were very kind to these beautiful little souls, throwing their veil of protection over them, and that such beliefs have bled through into Western cultures as far north and as west as Britain is a testament to the influence of such Greek classical writers and their writings. Niall McQuaiter notes that they thought that the kingfishers migrated to the seas where, in the solstice lull, in the winter storms that traditionally fell across the Mediterranean Sea, the original halcyon days, and in the 7 days leading up to the winter solstice, kingfishers would lay their eggs in vessels hanging over the sea, and the eggs would hatch in the following 7 days. McQuaiter includes the touching story behind these ideas. He writes, "The classical beliefs that kingfishers migrated to the sea in wintertime to nest and to lay eggs have their origin in the most significant myth about the kingfishers, namely the Greek story of Halcyone and Ceyx. According to the myth, Halcyone was the daughter of Aeolus, the god of the winds, and was married to Ceyx, king of Thessaly. And despite Halcyone's feelings or foreboding, Ceyx embarked on a long sea voyage to visit the oracle of Apollo. Halcyone's misgivings were proved right when Ceyx was drowned after his ship sank in a terrible storm. As the days passed with no word of her husband, Halcyone became increasingly distressed and prayed incessantly to the gods for his safe return. Eventually, the gods took pity on her and revealed to her in a dream that her husband was dead. And when she awoke, Halcyone immediately rushed down to the seashore, to the spot where she last saw Ceyx, only to find his body washed up on the shore. Taking pity once again on Halcyone and her grief, the gods then turned her and her husband Ceyx into a pair of kingfisher birds to live forever on the seashore. And then, on every year for a period in midwinter, Halcyone built her nest on the sea and guarded it until the eggs hatched. And her father, Aeolus, ensured that the seas remained calm and undisturbed by wind during this time. And so the halcyon days were a period of placid weather around the winter solstice, when it was safe for sailors to travel between the storms of winter. And since then, the term halcyon days has come to mean any period of calm or happiness during troubled times. Thank you to everyone who got in touch with me to say how much you enjoyed last week's episode, Rainy Town as Darkness Falls. And it's really interesting to see how many people find Edward Hopper's painting, The Nighthawks, so captivating. Pete Tuffery, I'm not at all surprised it's one of your favourite pieces of art, because you too capture that romance and the grit of city landscapes in rain in your paintings. And not that, of course, there's any rain in Nighthawks, but I hope you know what I mean. And as Tony Rutherford from over in Kentucky so atmospherically put it, that there's nothing like a rainy night with it falling on a tin roof and a nice cup of tea or coffee in front of a warm stove. And I also loved Sue, the bread lady's comment. She wrote, "As I listen to Rainy Town, it's raining and wind blowing outside my door. I close my eyes and I too am in the coffee shop in a booth nearby. I see the people you describe. I hear the clinking spoons on saucers. And yes, I see the stars on the water-drenched streets outside the coffee shop. I have a very busy day tomorrow, but tonight I am warmed by my hot cocoa and its melting marshmallows, sitting inside the same coffee shop, dry, and watching it rain. Tomorrow, with its heavy load, is nowhere in sight, thanks to you." Well, no, thank you, Sue, and I'm really glad that you enjoyed it. And I was struck by something Margaret wrote about the way rainy days, darkness, and coffee shop sounds and images are so very evocative, and that they somehow evoke a lot of different feelings. And she wrote about the slow time, people watching and enjoying the sights and sounds, but also the elements of being alone and both the comfort and the loneliness of the dark. And yes, I think it is that mixture that touches on loneliness and yet also the companionship of strangers. A feeling of solitariness that is not always negative and a welcome place of acceptance are so powerfully felt in these images. And it's difficult not to make these connections with Ralph McTell's Streets of London and the image we have there of in the all-night cafe at 11:15, same old man sitting there on his own, looking at the world over the rim of his teacup. Each tea lasts an hour, and he wanders home alone. And I'm really pleased also that you enjoyed the episode, Dave Keating. And yeah, I had a feeling that this one's going to be right up your street. Dave creates some wonderful monochrome, is it always monochrome, photographs of often urban street scenes that manage to capture, again, that moodiness but strange beauty that can be found in what is so often considered to be the unbeautiful. And thank you for all your comments, and a hello to Nick Dines, Joe Hunter, Rita Hee, Laurie and Little Bodie. And thank you for your recommendation, Laurie, of Susan Simard's Finding the Mother Tree. And I'm so glad that you're enjoying it. It's an amazing book, isn't it? And one I think needs to be read by as many people as possible. And thank you also for getting in contact with me, John, and please accept my heartfelt condolences at this time. All I can say is that the smiles will return, and I hope that the joy of your memories of that very special relationship soon begins to ease the pain of your parting. You're joining me on Bridge 55, which is the bridge that we started our first night walk with almost to the day 2 years ago. And I think that was in episode 5. And it's the same bridge, and night has long fallen. There's still quite a bit of traffic on the road that's passing at the top of the hill, which you might be able to be picking up.
the bridge is glowing white, or at least the paintwork, the iron paintwork, is glowing white in the light of the moon, which is almost above us, slightly to the south. And right now we're looking down southwards, down the canal, and the canal water is absolutely still. There's quite a breeze. There's a northeasterly breeze at about 8 miles an hour. I think they said it's going to be gusting 10, but we're quite sheltered down here. And last time we went south, we went down to Bearley Lock, if you remember, or if you heard it. And tonight we're going to go north. And it's a walk that I wanted to do for a while. And actually, I wanted to do it in the summer, but I never really got round to it. And the feeling just wasn't right. But I fancied another night walk. And I wanted you to come along with me. So wrap up warm. Let's go for a walk together. So we're heading northwards with the moon now behind us. The clouds are scudding. The wind might be 8 miles an hour down here, but it's certainly a lot faster at the a bit higher up. And it's still, although there's a lot of clouds, the clouds are really racing. It's one of those highwayman nights, a wild night, or a feeling of a wild night. Although, as I said, it's a little bit more sheltered down here. And there's still quite a bit of light. And I'm hoping to do this without using a torch. It's always better not using a torch. And although I've got a green torch, which is not meant to upset the wildlife, I'm not totally convinced that it doesn't disturb the birds, because there's a couple of times when I have used it and I've caused a complete mayhem and a lot of panic in the hedgerows as I pass. And I want to avoid that as much as possible. It's not fair on them after they've found their roost for the night and they're all nice and safe and settled to then have make them take to the air again. So I'm going to try and do this without certainly for most of it anyway, without recourse of a torch. And right now we've got the canal on our right. As I say, it's absolutely glassy still, and you can see the reflections of the trees on our, particularly on our right. There's a beautiful old oak that's still got a few branches of foliage still left. And next to it is an ash. His feathery branches are totally bare now. And above that, the clouds, now white in the moonlight. Earlier on, they were really dark and brown and charcoaly. A real stormy look to it when the sun has just set. But now they're just being lit by moonlight and almost looking like fleece, but scudding along. But down here we can't hardly feel it, and there's just a gentle rustle as we pass the reeds on our right, just down beside the canal, and they're looking for all the world like bamboo shoots. And to the left of us, there's, in the summer, there's a hedge, but it's quite bare now. And so really, it's just all died back to some shrubs, generally hawthorn, a lot of bramble, some big old oaks, and beyond them are fields. And that's where the sheep and the lambs are for most of the summer, the spring and the summer anyway. But they're empty today, or tonight. And in front of me, I can see some lights of boats moored along, just up from us. And on the hill to the right, there's a farmhouse or two, windows lit, looking very welcoming. The surface of the canal is just picked out with all these fallen leaves. We've just passed another oak, and there's actually a copse of alder here, and the whole of the surface is covered and almost looks as if you could walk across it. Now we're just coming into possibly my most favourite spot or place along here. In the summer, this is a really beautiful, cool, shady spot where the trees just reach overhead. And I've just stopped where I am, and there's this incredible old oak. And again, some of the branches still got quite a few leaves on. And in fact, I was looking at it earlier on today, and it still has that coppery, russety colour. But it's looking magnificent in the night with the white scudding clouds behind it and just the fleeting stars above it. Polaris and Ursa Minor should just be in front of me, but I can't see really hardly any stars at the moment. It's just, as when I looked at the weather app earlier on, it said there's only 10% cloud cover, but there's certainly a lot more than 10% right now. It's almost, it's not 100%. There's lots of gaps in the cloud, but very difficult to see any stars through them. Oh, just one's just appeared. Quite a bright star. Jupiter should be around as well. Jupiter should be behind us. And there's the moon's just broken through the cloud cover, and it bathes us in this beautiful, cool white light, particularly through the tracery of the hawthorn and some birch behind me. And we're going into a cutting, and as we'll go out a little bit further on in a minute. The cutting, I suppose, is probably, 10 feet on either side of us. And as I say, in the summer, it's beautiful, be cool. And in the winter, it's just a wonderful tangle of roots and holes. And it's where there's badgers and rabbits and foxes are. And Penny used to love it along here. And we used to spend hours just rummaging around, and I just sit or stand usually, and Penny would just lose herself in all the scent and the aroma landscapes that are open to dogs. One of the other reasons I love it so much down here is that this old oak that I'm standing beside and the ash, which are just a little bit further up, and there's also another group of old oaks just a little bit further on the other side of the canal, rising up a sheep pasture hill. And that's the roost of the rooks and the crows and the jackdaws, and no doubt a few magpie there as well. And particularly at this time of year, it's when you get those great wheeling chaos of noise and wing beat and movement. And it's absolutely incredible. And there are times when it almost looks like the trees are fully leaved again. And then suddenly, at some unspoken command or order, they all lift off. And instead of the leaves falling to the ground, they lift off into the sky. And it's a brilliant sight. And they just caught a whole load of stars suddenly appeared and twinkling through the lacework of branches above us. And the only downside of this part of the towpath is that because it's overshaded by trees. And I think there may be some canal leakage as well. It very rarely dries out. And so at this time of year, it can get quite sticky. I mean, the towpath's fine. There's no problems to walk on. Not like the first walk where I really was sliding around. It's just that every now and again, there's a dip and you sort of squelch through. a slough of mud. But apart from that, it's wonderful. And certainly right now at the moment when the moon is out and is shining so strongly, I think it's about 82%. It's waxing gibbous, it's on the rise, it's rounding, and it's, we got a few more nights like this and we're going to have some very nice nights, moonlit nights. And just walking here, and as I say, the sides are beginning to rise around us, particularly on our left-hand side. And this is where all the holes and the roots are. And you can just imagine all the things living snug beneath the shelter of the trees. It's really gorgeous. And now, in front of us, is a really strange feeling because we get these white stripes on the towpath, and that's where the moon is really shining brightly, and lots of moon shadow. And there on our right is another old friend. Well, actually, I should say a couple of old friends there, and that's the ash. And they're looking quite spindly right now. In the summer, they look so big and robust. There's John Betjeman's line, feathery ash, really springs to mind. And I think he was probably talking about the feathery nature, the feathery shapes of the leaves, but the branches have that feathery look. Oh, can you hear that? The crows are out. I love that. Oh, there's a bird just flew beside us. I don't know what it is. This is a good place for owls. It's a great place for bats as well, but we're far too late in the year for that. But they, as I speak, the clouds have just moved off. And the stars are now really appearing bright. All sorts of different whites, from yellows to absolute diamond studs. Some twinkling, some just bright.
A little earlier on, I was reading about the ash tree and its association with evil, and it being seen as a tree of bad or ill omen. And then Alexander Porteous talks about how after the introduction of Christianity in Britain, the old gods were turned into witches, and the ash, their sacred trees, or the trees in which the gods were associated, therefore also became associated with witchcraft and evil. And so even the old Norse tree of life, Yggdrasil, is seen as something bad. And yet here it's so difficult to associate these beautiful, almost sort of feminine, lithe shapes with anything other than something that's benign. And Porteous rightly mentions and notes how ash is quite often, even in sort of fairly modern literature, I mean, Porteous is writing, I think, in the 1930s, but even still, that still goes on, how the ash is seen as a tree of evil. And how strange how things associated with sacredness and protection and life are translated into things of evil. I should have mentioned right at the beginning that about the temperature, and the temperature is roughly about, when I left the boat, it was around about 3 degrees centigrade, which is, I don't think it works out, something like 37 degrees Fahrenheit. The wind chill
is meant to have drop that down to about 1 degrees. But here it's actually perfectly still and there's not a breath of wind here because we're sheltered. And it's certainly not uncomfortable at all. It doesn't feel cold at all. Even though now the stars are absolutely shining brightly. Like, I just want to stay here all night. No doubt you don't want to. But I just love this. It could be miles away, even though the traffic on the road above us, on the hill above us, is racing past. This is like a world on its own. And it could really be miles away from anywhere. And the moon stretches its light down the hills, down the sides of the cutting, stretching out across the waters. So it looks almost uncanny. The white is almost phosphorescent white. If this was a painting, it just wouldn't look right. Above us, the birds just fluttering. Can't quite see it. It's in amongst the branches of another of the ash that lean out across the waters. It's almost a Holloway down here, in the summer anyway. Completely covered like a tunnel of vegetation. It's absolutely wonderful. I'm standing here in the moonlight. The water now looks frosted, it looks frozen. Very strange. Walk a little bit further along. There's a lovely clumps of briar, still fully leaved. But the berries are beginning to be eaten away. And the cutting climbs up even higher. And now I can look and turn around a bit, turn towards the south. And there's the moon shining down absolutely from a clear sky. And the trunks of the trees now, covered with ivy. And the dog on the farm on the hill, certainly making his voice felt. I've not seen any ducks along this part of the canal anyway. I saw some just before I started recording, but haven't seen any along here yet. And whoops, there's another squelchy squadgy bit. And I haven't seen any more hens. There's usually quite a few more hens around here. They're probably laying low. And good on them for that. And we turn the corner and the canal now stretches out in front of us. The horizon is still quite light. There's quite a lot of street light, ambient light from the cities. We have Coventry on our right. We have Birmingham slightly to our left. And all of that, I guess, what is it? North, sort of from north northwest to north northeast, is really a line of not light, but it's certainly you can see the horizon, and it's a sort of a silvery light. And we're just passing on our left the field where horses are usually kept. I can't see any in there at the moment. And now The hedges are really... It's mainly actually ivy. That's absolutely thick. When I came along here a little bit earlier on this autumn, this was alive with hornets. It was amazing. The whole hedgerow was buzzing. And as I got closer, these huge hornets, there were hundreds of them, literally hundreds. I was just alive with them. But they were fine. They didn't worry, or weren't worried by me, and consequently, I wasn't worried by them. But I've never seen so many. And the canal begins to widen out a little bit. And as we come out of the cutting, again, the stars, look, the stars are amazing. So I can say, look at that. You can't see anything. But actually, there's Orion. I'll just turn around. So we're now heading, now facing sort of east. Orion's there and he's risen quite high. And you see Orion's belt, very, very distinctive. And Mars, you can see Mars glowing yellowy reddish colour. And so what I was going to say is that the vegetation down by the on the opposite side of the canal is not so dense, and so therefore you can see right across, and you see the swell of the hill, and there's a house a little bit further off in the distance, again all lit up, and it's got some Christmas lights up, and it's a big old house, one of the old sort of manors, and they always put on a display at Christmas with their lights. But in front of that, as I say, there's this lovely swell of a hill. And above us, to the right, at the top, towards the top of the hill, are two trees that we're going to be heading for in a minute when we cross the canal.
Well, as we leave the moonlit canal behind us, that's a good place to return back here to the boat. I planned on recording a little bit more, but the memory card of my field recorder was full. That just means that we can climb the unnamed hill another time. So, this is the Narrowboat Erica, signing off for what has been a truly magical, moon-washed night, and wishing you a very restful, peaceful and warm night. Good night. Temperature outside 1.8 degrees. Inside 23 degrees. Humidity 86%. Dew point 0 degrees. Wind direction, north-northeast. Wind strength, 8 miles per hour. Barometric pressure, 1019.3 falling. Cloud cover, 31%. Cloud ceiling, none. Precipitation, nil. Moon phase, 83.1%, waxing gibbous. Day length, 8 hours. Sunset, 15:57. Sky casting, 7:58.